14. Informed Influentials. James Rouse, the U.S. Army veteran who ran ExxonMobil's Washington office, retired in 2004. Lee Raymond appointed Dan Nelson, previously the lead country manager in Saudi Arabia, as his successor. Nelson stood 6'8" tall. With his silver hair, broad shoulders, and Naval Academy-bred deportment, he seemed to embody the popular image of a oil industry lobbyist. Among other things, he looked like someone who might be coming or going from a steakhouse. In fact, the prime rib on K Street, downstairs from the ExxonMobil office, was one of his favorite haunts. Through his background as a U.S. Marine infantry officer, Nelson had credibility with the war-saturated Bush administration, although in private, he was skeptical about Bush's military activism abroad. One of Nelson's closest friends was Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska, Nelson's home state, and a fellow military veteran. Hagel was a leading opponent in Congress of the Kyoto Protocol and other prescriptions to control greenhouse gas emissions. He also was an increasingly outspoken critic of President Bush's foreign policy. Hagel's outlook was not easy to categorize, but in general, he saw himself as a skeptical realist about the ability of the United States to coerce and transform other nations, and he was put off by the belligerence of the Bush administration. Nelson increasingly shared Hagel's views. The ExxonMobil chief lobbyist characterized himself to colleagues in Washington as fiscally and economically conservative, but a realist in foreign policy, and a libertarian on social issues such as gay marriage. Increasingly, Hagel, Nelson, and other Republican realists in town worked on Lee Raymond to rethink his associations with the more outspoken, militarily activist sections of the Republican Party, those shorthanded as the neoconservatives, such as some of the scholars and advocates at the American Enterprise Institute, a free market think tank. Raymond was in the running to become AEI's outside chairman, but Nelson warned him that while the Institute had plenty of economists with whom Raymond would agree, its foreign policy thinkers had become doctrinaire and were too activist to be aligned with ExxonMobil's worldview. Nelson built connections to Democrats as well. He and his wife bought a $2 million townhouse on Leroy Place in Washington's historic Colorama area. Their neighbors happened to include Philip and Milan Verveer. The latter was a longtime confidant of Hillary Clinton's. The Verveers got to know Nelson and persuaded him to encourage ExxonMobil to support a program called Vital Voices, designed to empower women in developing countries. Nelson had no particular experience in lobbying. He had what ExxonMobil valued more in Washington than backroom legislative deal experience, however, an insider's knowledge of the oil industry, as well as business and political credibility, particularly in the eyes of Republicans. "It's time to do things differently," Raymond told his K Street lobbyists around the time that Nelson arrived in Washington. He didn't specify what he meant. Raymond had no complaints about the departing James Rouse, but the change in leadership offered a chance to become more active, more visible, not so much to lobby on specific legislation, but to try to educate Washington more successfully about ExxonMobil and its worldview. Nelson expanded the number of outside lobbyists under contract with ExxonMobil, building a network of about 20 former senators, congressmen, Capitol Hill chiefs of staff, and regulatory specialists to support the in-house K Street team. Energy policy debate in Washington tended toward all-or-nothing pronouncements that were divorced from technical and economic reality. Hydrogen would be the next big energy source, or ethanol, or wind. Raymond retained his long-held biases against federal subsidies for alternative energy, but he had learned through bitter experience that it was easiest to make his case by talking about the energy industry's global structure and the embedded roles of oil, coal, and gas. One of Raymond's goals as Bush's second term began was to launch an education campaign in Washington. On April 13, 2005, Raymond arrived at the White House with Dan Nelson. They passed through security at the entrance to the West Wing of the White House and crossed the carpeted hallways lined with photographs of the President to meet Alan Hubbard, the National Economic Council's director and a close friend of Bush's. Hubbard had attended graduate school at Harvard with the President during Bush's carefree period. The president increasingly harbored doubts about America's dependency on oil imports. Global oil prices had been rising steadily since 2004, from about $25 per barrel to above $40 per barrel. Rising demand from China and India, the Iraq War, and instability in Nigeria were among the reasons. Higher oil prices had sent retail gasoline prices in the United States soaring, touching off a wave of popular anger and threatening the pace of the country's recovery from the 2001 recession. At the White House and the National Security Council, mid-level aides met continually to discuss policies and diplomatic strategies that might ease oil prices. The president seemed restless about the subject. He remained skeptical to agnostic about climate change. Bush also understood that global oil markets were liquid and interdependent, and that energy independence was, at best, a complicated goal for the United States, if it was realistic at all. Nonetheless, he seemed increasingly focused on the costs the United States paid in security and in its economy for its reliance on inexpensive imported oil. Bush thought out loud with his advisors about ways the United States might change the pattern of its relationship with the Middle East. He displayed excitement and curiosity about nascent hydrogen technologies that might revolutionize automobiles and eliminate oil as a source of transportation fuels. The president had hardly turned against the oil industry. He remained an ardent supporter of expanded domestic drilling, for example. But he was asking questions in private about whether and how it might be possible to find a technological breakthrough that would end America's dependency on oil imports within a single generation. Bush's friend and advisor, Al Hubbard, became the vessel of the president's ambivalence. He was a principal liaison for ExxonMobil and other oil lobbyists, and they had trouble figuring out where Hubbard was coming from on their issues. It almost seemed as if George W. Bush felt like he needed to do something that disassociated him with the traditional oil and gas corporations, and yet, simultaneously, the president was always very supportive of ExxonMobil and the industry, recalled one executive involved.